12 players who are difficult to project in 2015. That's our story here on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast on Wednesday, January 7th. I am Adam Azer. I am still here. Get used to it. I'm with Al Melchior and Scott White.
I'm still here, too.
Yeah, you guys are both still here. It's good to be back before I move. We're going to do another podcast next week. We're going to do a mock draft on Friday. Looking forward to that. You guys better update your rankings of the draft room, or else I'm going to put together a terrible team.
Well, they do have Al's projections in them now.
All right,
so
yes.
it's at least...
It'll get you in the neighborhood.
You know, there's distinctive Al flavor in the draft room, but they're at least intended for 2015.
At least I'll have a respectable January fantasy baseball team.
Yeah.
Email us, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. That's the letter I. And also, stop putting novels about your keeper league team in there. I mean, it's like three paragraphs, and then it's like, now help me keep three of these seven guys. So if you just simplify it a little bit.
In fairness,
that would be helpful.
Anytime anybody asks me a keeper question on Twitter, my answer is always prefaced with, well, it's hard to know the economics of your league exactly unless I'm playing.
No, I get that.
So then they try to include all these details, but it's still...
Well, let's get to the core details that we need.
Still, yes,
we
exactly.
Need,
I don't think I'm ever going to understand the economics unless I'm playing in there with you.
How many teams are in the league? How many players are on the rosters? What are the keeper stipulations? Like, you know, how many keepers? What round? Do you lose a round? Whatever. Is there a budget? What categories are you playing, if you're playing categories? And that's pretty much all we need, right? Also,
yeah.
Where are you from?
I wasn't listening, but
when did you get married? How many kids do you have?
How many cats?
Guys, we're going to talk about Jose Abreu. We're going to talk about Nate Eovaldi, Matt Wieters, Javier Baez, Cliff Lee. Four guys who are in the Hall of Fame now.
Yeah.
And more. So let's get to our news and notes. Didn't really have much. The Yankees are either close to signing or have already signed Stephen Drew, depending on when you listen to this, to play second base. He was horrible last year. He hit 162 in 85 games. He hit 150 with the Yankees in 46 games. You guys know I'm not a huge Stephen Drew guy.
I don't think anyone should be.
No.
Yeah. So just
I don't, AL I don't think JD
guy.
Should be. Tim.
I
forget about
you know.
Your little brother.
Well, I'm kind of interested to see what happens with him and Kendrys Morales. I can't imagine... having like no spring training and no team until June didn't hurt them and plummet their numbers. But I just didn't think Stephen Drew was that good beforehand anyway.
Yeah. No, it's a valid point. They kind of misplayed that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so. Tim Hudson is out 8 weeks after ankle surgery to remove bone spurs, likely to miss the start of spring training. We had a blog entry on our website about what the Giants might do, maybe Ryan Vogelsong. You know, it just seems
what's
like
wrong
they
with Yusmeiro
insurance.
Petit? What's wrong?
Because you still have Lincecum in your rotation. Like, their rotation right now is Bumgarner, Kane, Petit, Lincecum, and Hudson.
Yeah. Well, so no. Wait a second. You forgot somebody. You forgot Peavy.
Peavy, you're right. Okay.
So they need depth.
They need depth.
They don't need Ryan Vogelsong.
I think you could bring back Ryan Vogelsong. You could do worse than that.
Yeah.
That's like a sixth or seventh starter.
Yeah, if that's what he is.
Wow. All right. It doesn't matter.
Don't hear that term often. Sixth or seventh
rotation
starter.
Depth.
I gotcha. No, I understand.
The Phillies signed Aaron Harang to a one-year, $5 million deal.
That's going to go really well.
Hey, that's what we're saying all year long about Harang on the Braves. He had a good year.
Yeah. And
not really a great fantasy year, though.
I mean, he was startable. He was a good stream. He was a useful streaming option. But you look at the final numbers and it's still like a high whip.
He was a points guy.
Yeah. He was a compiler, to throw out a term we hear during Hall of Fame voting season.
So I guess you're thinking NL only for him?
Yeah.
For Aaron Harang? Speaking of compilers, what's up? Did I miss something?
Well, it's just been a long time since we podcast, so I know like Marlon Byrd got traded, right? There was something halfway.
Seth Smith
with Seattle now.
Those were the big ones.
Okay.
Did we do Eovaldi to the Yankees? Or was
I'm pretty sure we did. If not, we're going to talk about him later.
Did we do Cespedes? Yeah, I think we did that one.
Yeah, those were a while ago. I think Byrd to Cincinnati, though, it doesn't really change anything. It's still a favorable park for him. He's had two great years in a row. Is that why you excluded him?
No, I wasn't quite sure what we covered last time.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do the same show over and over again where we were just talking about trades.
Okay.
So
trades happen. Oh, Ben Lively, the guy who went to the Phillies. I kind of like him. He's kind of a good second-tier prospect. Maybe third-tier, depending on where you draw the lines in your tiers.
He's a pitcher, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So how would you describe his arm?
It's lively.
There you go. Okay. 12 players who are hard to project. Oh, Hall of Fame first. So Craig Biggio, compiler, and then Pedro Smoltz and Johnson, first ballot Hall of Famers.
You're such an AL guy if you think Craig Biggio was just a compiler.
He
first
was a
of all,
compiler.
Unless you're like,
but that's
playing,
not a bad
unless
thing.
You're playing until 50, which nobody does, to get 3,000 hits, you can't be a compiler. You just can't get
he
that
compiled
many.
Compiled 3,000 hits.
No. It's not just because he got opportunities, though. He was good
he was.
At getting hits in the number of at-bats he was given.
If you knew nothing about him and all you saw was his slash line, you would not say, oh, he's a Hall of Famer.
You think even though
very he, underwhelming slash line.
I
for
disagree.
Catcher select second baseman?
Yeah, for the positions he played.
How much catcher did he play? He didn't play that much catcher.
He played second base for a long time.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think you might be underrating the peripherals here. The doubles, the walks. He was a fantasy stud for almost right up until the very end. He was a stud. He was a guy, second baseman you were drafting. I think maybe a close comparison would be where we used to draft Dustin Pedroia. That was probably similar numbers year to year.
Mm.
So I think that's definitely a Hall of Fame caliber player for as long as he did it.
Fine. You can have him. Who's the biggest snub? I have no problem with Biggio going in. I'm just saying he's more of like a – he was never one of the best players in baseball, I don't think. You know,
Only because we don't evaluate players. We didn't evaluate players then like we did now. I think by today's standards with all the walks and, you know, not so much focus on home run totals, which was decent for him, by the way. I think he would have been – I mean, he was still a perennial all-star, but I think he'd be even thought of as higher than that. He'd be thought of as – I mean, probably we evaluate players more in real life like we would have evaluated him in fantasy, and he would have been an early-round pick every year.
Mm. Okay. Biggest snub?
Tim Raines, I think.
Yeah?
I just don't understand how he's not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I, the list is long. Yeah, I'm glad four people got in because yeah. I think that's the first time ever four were ever in under the current voting structure.
I think since the 50s.
Yeah. So, you know, it could have been a lot worse, but, I mean, to me, Bagwell's a slam dunk Hall of Famer, Piazza. Obviously, you got guys like Clemens and Bonds who theoretically should be obvious Hall of Famers, but you can at least understand why people are not voting them in.
Yeah.
And then the guy... Well, really, it's two. The two who don't get nearly as much credit as I think they deserve are Curt Schilling and Mike Mussina. Mussina, especially.
No, Schilling especially. Well, Schilling, to me, is a hands-down Hall of Famer. Mussina,
okay.
No.
Why
you don't
not?
Think Mussina
no.
is a Hall of Famer, a Yankees fan?
I think Mussina was Hall of Fame good with the Orioles, but not really close with the Yankees.
That was a lot of years with the Orioles.
The prime of his career was the Orioles, but he still had enough good years with the Yankees. That
you know, I think he was the kind of guy, like, as a Yankees fan, when you watched Andy Pettit, you realized he was better than his numbers. And I think a lot of Yankees fans, certainly I feel this way, Mussina was worse than his numbers. I never really felt like he was an ace. I never really felt like he could have been the best pitcher for them. You know, they had good rotations, and I never really felt like I had a lot of faith in him pitching in a huge game.
But you acknowledge at least that the numbers say he should be a Hall of Famer.
Mm.
And it was consistent. It was consistent over a year.
I mean, he was
always in the running for a Cy Young Award. He won 270 games.
I just don't think he was a Hall of Famer. I think the Hall of Famers, like, he's nowhere near Pedro Smoltz and Johnson or Maddux and Glavine. Maybe Glavine.
I think he's close to Glavine.
A lot of people had beef with Glavine getting in the Hall of Fame.
And in terms of longevity, I think he's probably up there with Smoltz, too. I kind of feel like Mike Mussina was the Tom Glavine of the AL, and that he was usually playing second fiddle. The difference is Glavine had all these 20-win seasons when Mussina only had the one. That's the biggest difference to me. And a lot of the peripheral stats actually give Mussina the nod over Glavine, such as WHIP. I saw one writer he say, oh, the 270 wins for Mussina are great, but not so much the ERA and WHIP. Mussina's career WHIP was 1.19. Greg Maddux's was 1.14, so I don't know why you'd hold his WHIP against him. It seems like that should be helping him get in.
That's a good WHIP.
Yeah.
I just never thought he was like an elite pitcher. I always thought he was like good to very good. But no, with the Yankees, that is. With the Orioles, he was a stud. But not enough years, I don't think, of that caliber pitching. Just my take. You both think Mussina should be it.
No, and I remember, you know, thinking at the time, and there was discussion at the time of, you know, Mussina, because he doesn't have more 20-win seasons, he's going to get snubbed, but his numbers really compare favorably with others in the hall.
Well, Schilling to me is...
Yeah, Schilling is just done. Look at how many 300 strikeout seasons he has. You never see any 300 strikeout seasons now, and he had like four. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Well, let's talk about guys who are hard to project, shall we? Al has six, Scott has six. Actually, Al had like 15, and Scott had about 25, and I had to narrow it down to six.
And I did some pruning before that list got to you.
Really?
I tried to help you out.
There are a lot of baseball players. You ever notice that?
Yes.
Yeah.
25 on each team at any given time.
Plus prospects.
Yeah, 40-man roster. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't have a lot of guys. All right, Al says Jose Abreu is tough to project. And we've talked about this before, but it's very interesting since he's going to be a first-rounder. Pre-All-Star break, 29 home runs. Post-All-Star break, 7. But he batted 350 with that 7 home run stretch after the All-Star break. So why is he hard to project?
Well, because we just do have the one season, and we've got those two halves. Now, we saw the powerful version of Abreu for a little bit longer. And I've seen reports where he's claimed that he fatigued later in the year. So maybe that first half, Jose Abreu, really is what we could see for a full season with you know, maybe some conditioning or adjustments. But, you know, people explain a lot of things retroactively, and you can't always just take them at face value. So I just look at the performance. I say, well, in the first half, you had somebody who was a clear first rounder, and in the second half you had somebody who was, he was a top 10 first baseman who gave you great average and on base percentage. That, you know, those are two really different things, and I assume in the vast majority of leagues he'll be a first rounder, but if we see something closer to the second half performance, he's going to be good, but he's not going to return value on that first round pick.
Concerns about Abreu?
Not to that level, no. I mean, he was still a monster in the second half. There is a divide. 29 home runs in the first half, 7 in the second. I mean, that's a divide. But I feel like it's easy to... If we go back through history with elite power hitters and look at their first and second half splits, it's kind of such an arbitrary cutoff that we're going to see a lot of that kind of stuff. I didn't handpick any examples here ahead of time. I think maybe the main difference for Abreu is just that it's the first year of his career, but just you read scouting reports on him and everybody makes him out to be this elite power hitter. So I don't really see any reason to doubt it just because the home run rate slipped a bit in the final 2.5 months last year.
First rounder for you?
Yeah.
First rounder for you?
He could be, yeah. Late in the first round.
Colton Wong. Al says Colton Wong is hard to project. 24 years old. And, you know, he had moments last year. He had more fantasy points per plate appearance than Howie Kendrick, who was a top 8 second baseman in both points and roto. So coming off a .249 season with 12 home runs and 20 steals in 113 games, also 14 doubles, 3 triples. What do you think about Wong?
Well, you know, the guys I put on my list, I'm not really sure what to think about them. I guess what I think and how I'm going to treat him on draft day is the guy from July forward last year, who was a good power hitting second baseman. But what I thought he was before that was somebody who could maybe hit 300 because he was really good at making contact and had a little bit of speed and also could use that speed to provide stolen bases. I think you'll still get the stolen bases from Wong, but he roughly doubled his strikeout rate from July forward as compared to March through June. And his average fly ball distance was more than 30 feet greater during those latter 3 months as compared to the first 3 months, and the fly ball rate was almost 10 percentage points higher. So we're talking about just a dramatically different player in the latter half of the season than in the first half. And, you know, I'm not sure, say, in a points league, that's going to make that much difference because the extra bases will compensate for the increase in strikeouts. But I think in a categories league where you're concerned about filling categories, I'm not sure Wong is going to be a guy that's actually going to help you in batting average with all those extra strikeouts we saw.
Yeah. No, I think that's I actually agree with that basically all around. I mean, because he was made out to be it coming up this amazing contact hitter who may or may not hit for power someday, and it's just he was the opposite last year. So who is he? Well, I think he's good, but in roto leagues, you want to know specifically what he's good at, and that's tough to say at this stage of his career.
Well, he's going to be good at steals, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah.
Could
pretty
you say you're going to get either average or power? Probably not both?
Well, I think there is the potential for both, but
I'm not really hearing much of a case against Colton Wong.
There's not really a case against him. It's just he's hard to project.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. And that said, you know, I said that the power sort of washes out for the strikeouts. Actually, I mean, I haven't really studied it, but I think his overall value probably I have it greater now than if he were the player I thought he was going to be because I've got him, I think, in roto only as a top 10 second baseman right now.
Okay. Hisashi Iwakuma. Al says Iwakuma is difficult to project. Iwakuma will be 34 years old this season. He has had a whip of 1 and 1.05 in his last two seasons. And going into his last seven starts last year, Iwakuma's ERA was 2.57. And in 2013, he had an exceptional ERA as well. He was 14-6 with a 2.66 ERA. And then it all fell apart. So, Al, what are you thinking about Iwakuma?
Well, I'm not sure what to make of that bad finish for him because, yeah, if you look at the track record for him in his career so far, he looks to be fairly consistent, but yet the ERA each year has been lower than you might think it is for a guy who is a decent but not a great strikeout pitcher and really is pretty susceptible to the long ball. That's the thing that I worry about with him. He's had a strand rate around 79-80% when more typically it's in the lower 70s for the average pitcher. And what I worry about with him is that increase in the ERA at the end of the season, a lot of it is strand rate driven. Now, is it just that for whatever reason he just had an off few weeks at the end of the year, or was that regression happening all at once? And the closest comparison that I can make, not that they're similar pitchers by any means, but Jeremy Hellickson, first 2 years, really low ERAs, and then he's stopped being exceptional at stranding runners, and he wasn't very useful in fantasy after that. So I wonder if we've just seen a 2 2/3 year mirage from Iwakuma, and he really is this 3.5 ERA guy.
Interesting.
He wasn't completely healthy down the stretch, though. I think that's worth mentioning, too. I mean, I get he's hard to project. I don't think I'm as worried about him as Al is, but he was pitching with back, groin, side injuries down the stretch, and just some of those things that wasn't worth taking him out of the rotation for because they were competing for a wild card spot, but at the same time, it's reasonable to think it impacted his performance.
Al says Drew Hutchison is hard to project. He was the number 79 starting pitcher in points leagues last year with 184 and two-thirds innings pitched. He was pretty up and down. He could be really good. Only averaged 5 2/3 innings per start. So Drew Hutchison. Scott, I'll give you the first word on Drew Hutchison.
Oh,
do you think he's hard to project?
I don't know who Drew Hutchison is.
He's a pitcher for the Blue Jays.
But that's not important right now.
Yeah. Well, I know that. I feel like we saw 3 Drew Hutchisons last year.
You need glasses, buddy.
Because the first one, he looked like this, like, he was one of the top waiver claims at the beginning of the year. And then he fell apart there for a few months, had like an ERA over 5. Trying to remember, I think maybe he had a little bit of a bounce back at the end. But
didn't he become kind of a home road guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, he did bounce back at it. And his last 7 starts, 3.32 ERA, 1.11 whip, and 12.6 strikeouts per 9 innings. And so his final ratio stats look pretty good, like a guy who might be on the verge of a breakthrough. But at the same time, he was so awful there in the middle of the season. and the ERA ended up terrible as a result. And starting pitcher is so full of potential aces as it is, why do you take a chance on him? I'm inclined to project him poorly. As someone who doesn't make official projections, I'm inclined to not like him.
He wasn't much of a home road guy. 4.73 ERA at home, 4.33 on the road, and the home runs were about identical. I'm going to look to see if he became that kind of guy, but I don't think so. Go ahead.
All right, so here's the thing with Hutchinson, because when I do work on projections, I you know, run into stats that I find really interesting, and one of the stats that I really like now that I really been digging into is for pitchers, the percentage of fly balls that are pulled against them. And a typical ratio is about 40 to 45%. Mm-hmm. Hutchinson's last year was 30%. And if you look at the bottom of that leaderboard, where it's like the 20s, 30s, it's mostly pitchers that don't give up very many home runs. And so I thought, okay, especially in that ballpark, that's a pretty useful skill to have. And then it turns out his average fly ball distance was also one of the lowest for qualifying starting pitchers. So that got me even more interested. Now, there was a skew in that stat, though. He was much better at limiting hard hit balls facing right-handers, not very good against facing left-handers. And it turns out he gave up only six home runs against right-handed hitters, 17 against lefty hitters.
You had the wrong split, Adam.
Yeah. So, and also, Scott, you referenced the strikeouts, the 12% whiff rate. I mean, that's going to get me looking deeper into any pitcher, because that's a great
really
rate.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. So you got Hutchinson. He's got all this strikeout potential. He's got this potential to have a very low home run rate and possibly a low overall ERA, but those splits really bother me. So I was all excited to tout him as a sleeper or a possible breakout guy, until I really looked at how bad those splits were against lefties. And so I'm not sure how high to be on him. I want to like him, but...
Well, I just think, is he, you know, this was his first full season, and he's still young. And I always thought he passed the eyeball test. He looked like a good pitcher with good stuff. Maybe he finally puts it together and breaks out. Yeah. Because I was pretty excited about him when I saw him early last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I jumped on the bandwagon.
Yeah, so... I don't know. So I guess you're saying that there's the potential that last year's home run rate would be skewed, which would make the ERA more in line with the WHIP going forward, but maybe not with all the lefties he's facing. Right?
Right.
Did I kind of like shorthand that?
You did, Doug.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Moving on.
Yeah.
TJ House, 25 years old, and went 5-3 with a 3.35 ERA last year, and he had four times as many strikeouts as walks, but not a lot of strikeouts. He kind of deceiving numbers because he, like in August, he had a 2.89 ERA, but only two quality starts out of five. And in September, he had a 1.50 ERA and only two quality starts out of four. So sometimes he pitched deep in a game. Sometimes TJ House went like five innings. Anyway, difficult to project for Al.
Yeah. So you had that really strong finish there, although you said wasn't always going deep into games, but the results were certainly very good in the late going. But what intrigues me about House is that even in the minors, and in fact, even in the minors as recently as last season, not really a great control guy, and yet pretty consistently with the Indians, threw a lot of strikes, 65% strike thrown ratio, 1.9 walks per nine, which is outstanding. And those really eclipsed the numbers he put up at Columbus in the very same season. So first of all, can I trust the control? Because if the control's there, you've got a guy who is a very good ground ball pitcher. Not a great strikeout pitcher, but you know, not bad.
He was good. He was a good strikeout pitcher for those last 2 months when he was going five innings.
Yeah, so you know, there's a lot of good there, but he, you know, like Hutchinson, although obviously from the reverse side being a lefty, some splits issues with House, and the question of just can you trust him to be a control pitcher? Because if you can, and if the splits aren't too terrible, then this is a guy that needs to be drafted in 12-team mixed leagues.
Yeah.
If not, he could be. And plus, there's a squeeze there in the Indians' rotation. And
I kind of like House as a deep sleeper for the way he finished the season, and because I don't think too many people are going to be on board TJ House this spring, so you can probably
That's fair. Yeah.
Wait to draft him in an AL only league. But there are things about him that kind of remind me of Travis Wood, the way he started his career with the Reds. Very similar numbers. A 3.51 ERA, 108 whip, a strikeout rate higher than you expect, a walk rate lower than you'd expect, and that kind of normalized as his career went on, and he became pretty much a nothing in fantasy. And then on top of it, like you were saying there, at the end, the Indians, there's a squeeze in the rotation. It doesn't seem like they're committed to having House in there for as well as he finished the season. They might go with Gavin Floyd or Trevor Bauer or Danny Salazar instead. Basically, one of those four is going to be an odd man out, or maybe two of those four. I don't know. It seems like right now, as things stand, you don't get a lot. You don't get the sense that House is going to be one of the favored ones. So,
okay,
obviously that would change things if he's not even in the rotation.
And finally, Al says Nathan Eovaldi, who was the number 94 starting pitcher in points leagues last season, despite throwing 199 and 2/3 innings. That's pretty bad. He had a terrible record, though. Yeah. He's hard to project. 25 years old this season and 6-14 last year with a 4.37 ERA. He has a terrible whip, 1.3 or worse in all four of his major league seasons. What do you think?
Well, I was getting genuinely excited about Eovaldi when I, again, started putting together projections and looking at what he did last year. And another one, a strong finish in some ways. Increased his strikeout rate, not dramatically, but the whiff rate went from 8% to 10%, and he was getting a lot more swings and misses on both of his slider and his curve. So I took that as all really encouraging for a guy who throws hard and has been projected as somebody who he pitches in the zone a lot. Seems like he'd be a really strong candidate to be a good strikeout pitcher, and it's just never materialized for him. And then he got traded to the Yankees, and this is yet another pitcher who has some problematic splits that could really get exacerbated going to Yankee Stadium, where he already has trouble with lefties, and going to a stadium where lefties could really feast on him. So I would say on balance, even though, again, with the encouraging signs, I'd like to be optimistic about Eovaldi. I think there's just too many danger signs.
Okay, we've named Jose Abreu, Colton Wong, Iwakuma, Hutchison, House, and Eovaldi. Those are Al's six of Al's difficult players to project. Who has the most downside relative to where you expect them to get drafted? Most bust potential, I guess I would say.
Well, really, the latter three, Hutchison, House, and Eovaldi, you know, these are guys that may not. In fact, House and Eovaldi, I would say,
but they're all AL only guys at worst.
Well,
unless House doesn't make the rotation,
right? Well, and even he, you know, could be some depth in an AL only league. Because I mean, even if he doesn't start,
he could be a number six or seven starter.
Exactly. So I mean, it's hard to call any of those guys a potential bust because I don't think there's that much, you know, at stake with them in the first place. But
fine. So then most downside.
I think probably Iwakuma, just because Abreu, well, I said that there's a chance he won't return first round value. I think he's going to be very good no matter what. And Iwakuma, though, is somebody that a lot of people could draft as their number two, number three starter. And, you know, if things don't go well and he, you know, has a 3.5 ERA or higher, you know, he's not going to be anything close to that.
I was going to say Wong, just because he's so unproven and what he was supposed to be good at, he didn't deliver on at all. So
right.
It depends where he ends up getting drafted. If he's a late rounder, fine. But just based on what Al has him projected for, I think he's going to be more than that. You're not really going to get him at a sleeper value. And if that's the case, I think he probably has the most bust potential.
Okay, six guys that Scott White finds difficult to project in 2015. First, I'd like to have an editorial moment.
Uh-oh.
So I ate a lot of crap over the holidays.
Literally?
Crab. Oh, you said crab or? Oh,
crap.
Crap.
Yeah, you know, garbage.
But like, oh, crap, that's good.
Pizza, this and that.
Okay.
So I've been trying to like lose 5 pounds and just be healthier.
Whatever.
And I've been eating salad lately.
Uh-huh.
Gosh, it's terrible. It's so bad.
Yeah, there are very few salads that I can honestly say I enjoy. I usually just eat them because I feel like I'm supposed to.
Yeah,
you know?
It's got to have fruit in it. It has fruit in it, I'm okay.
My salad needs some meat.
Yeah, definitely some meat.
I think fruit is more important for a salad. It gives it a little sweetness.
You can get that from the dressing, maybe.
I guess it's kind of cheating, Al.
Yeah.
Get some apple slices in there. Cranberries. You know, that's good
stuff.
Well,
maybe if you're not putting meat in there, that's your problem.
Look, I had a chicken Caesar salad today. I hated every minute of it.
Well, Caesar salad is a different animal.
Favorite lettuce.
And it's not a very healthy salad, by the way.
No, but it's less carbs. It's not killing me. It's not like I'm eating junk. Favorite dressing. I mean, sorry, favorite lettuce. Because I think romaine is just awful.
Favorite lettuce? I don't know enough lettuce varieties.
Yeah,
to
I was going
to
say, I think
spinach.
Well, that's a lettuce. Like, I thought spinach was spinach. Because spinach is what I typically have in a salad.
Salad, whatever.
Yeah, I'm going spinach.
It probably is romaine, if that's what I'm thinking of. Sorry.
An iceberg romaine. That
yeah, iceberg's just not really anything. It's filler, but.
Well, let's talk baseball. I just wanted to get that off my chest.
All right, lettuce conversation.
Because since I'm moving, I'm having a lot of going away dinners and lunches. So tomorrow I'm going to Anthony's Pizza with some friends, and you guys know, I mean, this is epic pizza. So I'm going to get the meatball and ricotta pizza. I'm going
to
have like
that's
five
the one
slices.
To get.
It's going to
five
be awesome.
Slices.
I'm
going to
have at least three.
Oh my goodness.
Probably four. Probably not five. But I'm going
to
have a
one
lot
one for
of
each
food.
Pound you're trying to lose.
Yeah. So I'm trying to establish a little bit of room to go crazy at Anthony's.
Well, I implore you to let us talk about Scott's six players.
Matt Wieters will be 29 years old in May and looked like he was having a breakout season, but it was only 26 games. He was slugging .500 Matt Wieters last year and had never slugged higher than .450. So here was this guy who was just consistent every year, kind of good but not great, never great.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's coming off Tommy John, but he was having a huge season. And Scott says, yeah, I just don't know what to do with Matt Wieters.
Because he was off to a great start. I mean, just catchers on a per-game basis, no matter how few at-bats he got. He was number one last year. And it wasn't, obviously, it's too small of a sample size, but it was the kind of start that made me think more was potentially on the way, because we've always felt with Wieters, I mean, he was as high-end as catcher prospects get. He should have been so much better than he was. Catchers a lot of times take longer to develop. He's still in the prime of his career, and he had made this adjustment. He had changed his stance from the left side of the plate, and his splits as a switch hitter. That is what had brought him down before, his numbers against right-handed pitchers. He had made this change that seemed like it was manifesting in these great numbers, and then it suddenly ended. So we didn't get a chance to see if he regressed to the mean. And I think it is dangerous to obviously give this month-long stretch more credit than the previous 4 or 5 years or however long it was. But catcher is not exactly star-studded right now. And, you know, Yadier Molina seems like he's fallen off. Willian Rosario, who knows what to think of him. McCann's fallen off. Where exactly do you want to draft Wieters, knowing that and the fact that he's coming off Tommy John surgery, and we don't know how long that might delay his start to the season. Seems like he's going to be ready to go at the beginning, but maybe not. So it's just there's a lot of question marks here, and because of the position he plays, it really puts the pressure on you to give him to want to take an optimistic stance with him when maybe that's not the wisest thing. I actually have him, I think, fifth at catcher right now in both formats. I moved Gattis ahead of him with the news that Gattis will be a full-time left fielder now instead of a sit-every-3-days catcher.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that still seems awfully high, fifth.
All right, Wieters or Molina?
I have him just ahead of Molina.
I would take Wieters over Molina, too.
Mesoraco or Wieters?
Mesoraco.
Mesoraco.
McCann or Wieters?
Wieters.
Wieters.
Are you optimistic about him?
I wouldn't say so, which is not to say there isn't reason to be optimistic, but it's just, you know, the things that Scott mentioned, the longer extended track record, the question mark about how long it takes him to get back into form. I'll be somewhat conservative, but not so conservative that I would take the likes of McCann or, you know, some of the other guys that you mentioned over him.
So let's talk about three shortstops that Scott says are difficult to project. They're all young. Javier Baez and Xander Bogaerts are 22 years old, and Gene Segura will be 25 this season. And all were pretty disappointing last year. Javier Baez, he started his career with 3 home runs in his first 3 games. They were all in Coors Field. And then he had 6 home runs and 6 doubles the rest of the way in 49 games. I mean, he was awful. And he finished with a 169 batting average, and he struck out 95 times in 52 games. Bogaerts, you can kind of break it down to when he was moved from shortstop to third. He was awful at third, batted 182. He batted 266 at short. And Gene Segura was just disappointing all year.
Yeah.
So, Scott, I'll let you kind of talk about these three. And well, let's say, like, who are you having most trouble projecting?
Baez. Baez, to me, is like the poster child of this whole exercise because the upside is so incredibly high and the downside so incredibly low. He struck out, did you mention his 95 strikeouts?
Yeah.
That was in 213 at-bats, so almost every other at-bat.
To 15 walks.
Yeah, he struck out, and that's that'll kill your batting average if you keep doing that. But at the same time, the power is just, like, legendary, how the type of power scouts talk about this guy having. And we've seen, both in the minors, and, you know, for as much as he slowed down, that was still a 25-homer pace for a guy hitting 150 during that stretch. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And he's shortstop eligible on top of it. So if he's hits well enough to stick around long enough to hit 40 home runs, I mean, I almost don't care what his batting average is at that position. I think he has that kind of potential, but there's also the chance he's striking out every other bat in April, and they're like, we need to swap this guy out for Addison Reed or Chris Bryant, whoever it is. And then he's just a wasted draft pick entirely. So that makes him extremely difficult to project. I have him 8th, I think, at shortstop.
Is he better in points or roto?
I would say roto, but I don't know that there's a big difference either way, because the batting average would probably bring him down in roto. But obviously, I was thinking strikeouts
right.
And head to head.
Al, who do you think is the hardest to project? Out of Baez, Bogaerts, and Segura.
I would agree with Scott that it's Baez because there's just such great potential there, and there's such an incredibly low floor, which could include him spending a big chunk of the year in AAA, I think.
So who's safer, Baez or Bogaerts?
I think Bogaerts is.
That's an obvious
question. Bogaerts or Segura?
No, okay. Who would you draft first of these three? Who's your favorite?
I actually have Baez ranked one spot ahead of Bogaerts because I think...
And ahead of Segura as well?
Yeah, several spots ahead of Segura. I think I have Segura 12th and the other two 8th and 9th. The upside for Baez, I think he's capable of delivering it now, and I think it's clear exactly what it is. Bogaerts kind of cast some doubt over exactly how good he is last year. Well, Baez just needs to get over the strikeout issue. I guess that's where I make the distinction. Bogaerts had a very strong finish last year and was actually rated a higher prospect than Baez when they were both in the minors. So, I mean, you're talking about a similar situation with him, just not the same extreme. Almost the same high, not quite as low of a low.
I've actually got Segura ranked the highest right now.
Yeah. Well, he was... Okay, so the thing with Segura, 2013, he was the number one shortstop in roto, I think, and number 4 in points, something like that. Number 4 in points, number 1 in roto. And last year he was barely top 20. He was outside the top 15. And in 2013 he led the position in steals and triples, but he was terrible after the All-Star break. 241, 268, 315. So now it's a year and a half of him being pretty bad. So how come you have him ranked the highest, Al?
It really comes down to the steals, which is still something of a concern because he was so inefficient last year.
He was bad at everything last year.
He really was. And I just think of the three, I trust him most for batting average.
Okay.
I think it's clear he performed over his head in 2013, or maybe at least delivered too much too soon. But he's still 24. He still has a top prospect pedigree. He still made contact at a very high rate. And There should be at least more extra base power than he showed last year. I don't know if he's ever going to be a big home run guy, but he's a guy who should get 30-plus doubles, you would think, if he's not hitting a dozen-plus homers.
What an interesting position this year, huh? Because you've got injury-plagued guys at the top. I'm sure we talked about this last month when we did shortstop rankings, but you've got gambles in the middle rounds, and it's a crappy position. So what if you take two of these guys with back-to-back picks, you know?
Well, that's easier to justify in Roto when you got the middle infield spot, because you're probably...
Yeah, you don't
depending on where they actually go, because it sounds like Aljas Baez and Bogart's a lot lower than I do. Where I have them ranked, I'm thinking 11th through 13th round range, and that's kind of early to take shortstops back-to-back. But I understand what you're saying, kind of hedging your bet there, because one of them
could be great.
Could be awesome. Could be a top five player at the position.
Right. Okay, and then, you know, you called Javier Baez the poster child.
Yeah.
I think he needs to share that poster with George Springer.
No, that's a good point.
Springer's a real tough one to project.
Yeah.
He did hit 20 home runs, but he hit 231 last year. And didn't run, what did he have, a knee injury last year?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he has speed. So,
well, actually, there was a quad injury.
Quad.
And you know what reminds me of that? He did rehab at Quad Cities.
Oh, there you go. Now, do you know what song the Quad City DJs?
Come on, Ride the Train.
Yeah, that's right. Woo, woo! Good stuff, Al. All right, Springer, go.
Well, I feel a little better about Springer than Baez. He had a crazy strikeout rate, too, but it was one every three at-bats. And we saw him look good for stretches, longer than just a three-game stretch. At the start of his stint, his final numbers before he got hurt were honestly about where I expected them to be. Probably always going to have batting average issues, but he can have a batting average as low as he did last year and still be an asset in fantasy. That's what he proved. If he does make up some ground at batting average, and there have been high strikeout guys who have hit for a good batting average, Matt Kemp is one of them, then he could be top 10 outfielder, but that's a big if. I think
be top 10 or outside the top 30.
I would say more likely outside the top 30, but it's almost a coin flip for me. And I think kind of what really just demonstrates how hard he is to project is that Al made honest projections for George Springer before he turned loose his projections on the site. And initially, he came out as, what, the seventh best player in fantasy, which is obviously not what you wanted to do. But.
No. And I think third or fourth among outfielders. Yeah. It's a crazy high because I gave him a lot of hit the stolen base upside because I think he was limited by that quad injury. And really, in some ways, I thought it was kind of a conservative projection otherwise because it wasn't like I gave him a high batting average and I had him on the same home run pace. He was on last year, not exceeding it, but that still puts him at about 40 home runs.
I'm kind of feeling Springer. I don't mind taking shots. Like, what round do you think we're getting Springer in?
Not sixth? That late. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I think earlier than that, actually. I was thinking more like fourth, maybe.
Fourth might be a little too early for me.
But if I get
him
in
the sixth, I'd do it in a second. Fifth, I'd have to start thinking about it. Fourth seems a little early.
I think I'm on the same page as you, Adam.
But I mean, look, he got off to an awful start when he first got called up. His first 19 games, Springer hit .224 with no home runs. Then in his next 19 games, he hit .315 with 10 home runs and 23 RBI. And then he finished doing very poorly in his final 40 games, batted under .200 with 10 homers. So I don't know. It's obvious the guy's got talent and don't want to judge him too harshly on his first season in the bigs, especially when he was playing hurt. We'll see where he goes. Last guy, Cliff Lee. Hard to project. My thought on Cliff Lee, Scott, is I feel like we've seen recently with guys like Halliday and Sabathia, Lincecum, when it goes bad, it goes really bad in a hurry. And I don't know if Cliff Lee's in that category. I mean, you're talking about a guy who before last year had six straight seasons of 210 regular season innings. And 8 of 9 with 200 regular season innings. Got hurt last year, had a weird elbow issue, and just had a bad year. But it was 3.65 ERA, but he gave up 100 hits and 81 and a third.
But on the plus side, he farted during a post-game interview.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. In a locker room, not at a podium.
Yeah.
So that's even worse.
There was a little bit of a velocity drop for Lee last year. Not as extreme, I feel like, as some of those other guys you mentioned, Halliday, Sabathia, etc. And that doesn't defeat your point, but I think basically you kind of summed it up in a different way. The elbow injury Lee suffered wasn't supposed to be a big deal, but then he took a long time to come back from it, came back for like 3 starts, I think, and then was down again. It's an elbow strain, not a sprain, so it's not a Tommy John situation, but in a way that almost makes it riskier to me that there wasn't some surgery that corrected it. Like, what's going on there? Is it going to come back? Is it going to influence him forevermore? I don't know. And how, as good as he was the years leading up to last year, 2011, 2013, he was a top 5 starting pitcher in fantasy. In 2012, he probably would have been as well if he didn't have that fluky 6-9 record, because the Phillies were so bad that year. So I don't know. I have him in my top 30 for sure. I think maybe my top 25. But there's a lot of downside there, a lot of risk there. It's just how risk-averse are you? And how badly do you want a potential ace in the 7th or 8th round?
7th or 8th round, Cliff Lee?
You know, probably not. It could be tremendous value, but I'm thinking along the lines of you. I think it could be a very, very low floor for him.
And if he had trouble winning games with those Phillies.
Right.
Well, it wasn't just the Phillies. I mean, that was exceptionally bad even for a bad team, 6-9, as well as he pitched.
Okay, let's go to the emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Eric from Manchester. I'm not sure if he did this on purpose. I think he tried to say, hey, hi, and hello, but he forgot the O. So it just says, hey, hi, and hell, which is a little ominous. 14-team head-to-head points keeper league. Keep an additional player each year. This year we're up to 7 keepers. So he says, Trout, woo, look at this. Holy crap. Trout, McCutcheon, Goldschmidt, Stanton, Matt Harvey, and Cole Hamels in a 14-team league. 9 needs just 1. Pitching dominates this league. Wins are plus 5. Losses are minus 3. Quality starts are plus 3. All right, so pick one. Cargo, Cliff Lee, Kipnis, Tyson Ross, Aroldis Chapman, Alex Wood, and Hyunjin Ryu. Cargo, Cliff Lee, Kipnis, Ross, Chapman, Alex Wood, Ryu.
Ooh.
I'm thinking Alex Wood. There's a part of me that still says Cargo, but...
You're talking about a 7th-round pick, basically, in a 14-team league. So
yeah, I'm kind of leaning Cargo myself.
That's true. Yeah,
but Alex Wood, particularly if you could start Alex Wood at relief pitcher in your head-to-head points league, is
can you?
Well, is he there? Is relief pitcher eligible in standard leagues. Yeah.
Oh.
So that's
oh, right, because he had that weird bullpen thing.
He would be my second choice for sure.
Okay. So Cargo for Scott.
And I'll switch to Cargo. Yeah.
Here's John in Culver City, California. Dear David Lee, Sammy, and Gary.
All right. They had a third lead singer, Van Halen?
I don't know who Gary is.
I thought David Lee was a basketball player.
He is, but he's also David Lee Roth.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, I don't know who Gary is. But
just some guy.
Sure. But as Scott now know, I would do anything for love by Meatloaf stuck in my head for some reason. It's pretty bad. 12-team AL only. 5x5 Roto Keeper League, on base percentage instead of batting average. Each team can keep a maximum of 10 major leaguers plus 5 minor leaguers. There is a significant price inflation over normal auction values in the range of 25 to 30%. So he needs help with his last 2. He's already keeping Dozier, Cobb, Doolittle, Kluber, Machado, Holland, Neftali Feliz, and Mookie Betts. So again, 12-team AL only, and he has 3 closers. So pick 2. Jose Abreu for $38. Cespedes for $28. Alex Gordon for $22. Leonis Martin for $16. Brandon Moss for $15. Danny Salazar for $9. And Diane Viciedo for $8.
I'm taking Abreu and Moss. Moss at $15 could be great value.
Abreu is the easy one for me. I don't mind Cespedes at 28, but I'll agree. I'll go Moss at 15.
Owen in Chester, Virginia. Dear Mark, Barry, and Alex. Those feel like
oh, I know who they are. Users, yeah, maybe? Roid Ragers.
Oh, McGuire.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Ah.
Barry Bonds.
I was going to say only one of them is a Gibb brother.
Yeah. More than a woman. All right. A couple of the major storylines I'm looking forward to this year are the exciting returns to the majors for Jonathan Sanchez and how he manages to put up negative 13 fantasy points in his six starts. Also, future Hall of Famer Rafael Ortega raising his incredible career batting average to 600 with a hit in his only at-bat this year. I guess my questions are, did Jonathan Sanchez egg your house, and how do you project the guys at the bottom of these projection lists? I don't really get this question, but I thought it was funny, and I was hoping one of you did.
Well, I get it now, because this must be how the projections have these guys come out. And, you know, with guys like...
Oh, you projected to...
Yeah.
Jonathan Sanchez for negative 13 points.
Yeah, well, you know, players who, you know, may not even have a major league role, we just go with the default three-year average, and that's what Jonathan Sanchez has done on average over the last 3 years, so.
That's really funny. So he didn't egg your house?
Well, he did, in fact, but that's kind of beside the point.
Gordon in Portland, Oregon. Head-to-head, 6x6. Standard categories plus negative categories are strikeouts for batters and losses for pitchers. So we keep four at the cost of a draft pick 3 rounds earlier than the previous year's draft position. And undrafted players cost your last pick to keep. So pick four of these. Jose Altuve losing a 3rd-round pick. Ian Desmond, 18th-round pick. Ding, 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 ding. Jonathan Lucroy, 10th. Starling Marte, 19th. Todd Frazier, 22nd. Jacob DeGrom, 22nd. Zach Britton, 22nd. Sean Doolittle, 22nd.
Well, because it's categories and because there's so many good hitter values, I probably just forget about the pitchers. Desmond, like you said, is obvious, round 18 pick. But then it's really tough after that. I'm not even excluding Altuve in the 3rd round because to me he's at worst an early 2nd rounder, so...
I think Lucroy, if it's a two-catcher league, Lucroy in the 10th is pretty hard to pass up.
I agree.
It would have to be two-catcher leagues for me, though.
Yeah,
just agreed. Not that. I mean, he's great value there, but there's to pass up some of those others. I think I would keep Altuve just because I'd feel most confident I'm definitely getting an elite player with him. And then maybe those other two, Altuve, Desmond, Marte, and Frazier would probably be my four.
Oh, really?
Unless it's a two-catcher thing, then you can swap in Lucroy for Marte.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And
a bag of chips.
Yes, all that and a bag of chips. And I'm looking for some way to get DeGrom in there, and I just don't see it.
Todd Frazier could be a total bust.
But he not, could be.
I mean, in the 22nd round.
Yeah, he could be.
Okay.
Hard to project that Todd Frazier.
Yeah, I'm sure. Last one is Joe from New York City. Hi, Harry, Lloyd, and Billy in 4C. Did anybody see? I know you did now. Scott, did you see the Dumb and Dumber?
Dumb and Dumber TO?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, me either.
No.
Al,
you know what I have seen.
Al, you know what, Al? I want to talk about it next podcast. We're so far into this that we might have lost listeners by now. So we got to, on Monday, we got to find out what you thought of Three Amigos.
All right. Movie review coming.
We have a plethora of things to get to on Monday. Here's the keeper question from Joe. Pick four of the following. 7x7 roto. Got OPS and total bases. And we've got quality starts and strikeout to walk ratio. And I have an extra 4th-round pick, but no 12th-round pick. Whatever. Joe. All right, pick four. Stanton in the 1st round. Braun in the 1st round. Freddie Freeman in the 4th. Darvish in the 4th. Lucroy in the 5th. Marte in the 11th. Cole Calhoun in the 13th. J.D. Martinez in the 20th round. And Josh Harrison in the 20th round.
Mm-mm.
We're not keeping Braun in the 1st round.
We are keeping Stanton, right? Can agree on that?
No, not necessarily.
Right. I'm keeping him. All right, I've got Stanton, and I've got J.D. Martinez. Can't pass that up in round 20.
Okay.
Yeah, those were the easy ones for me, too.
But yeah, I'm passing on Braun. I'm passing on Freeman, I think, in round four. And I think I'm passing on Darvish, too. All right, so that's Calhoun, Lucroy, Amarte, and Harrison. Two out of those four, right?
Yeah, but their draft spot, except for Harrison. Harrison in 20 seems late, but Lucroy in 5, yeah. Marte in 11, Calhoun in 13. Those don't sound like values to me. I think Freeman in 4 sounds like more of a value than those. I think Darvish in 4 sounds like more than a value than those. So Harrison in 20. I know I have Harrison ranked to go higher than 20th, but at the same time, I'm not particularly excited about keeping him.
No. You know what? You kind of talked me into Freeman. So I'm going to go, I'll go Marte and Freeman.
Yeah.
Marte, Freeman, Stanton, Martinez. Tough call.
All right, let's keep Stanton, Freeman, Darvish, and Martinez. I say.
How many positions is Harrison eligible at?
Just two.
Just two, yeah.
Third Second base, and third?
Third and outfield.
Oh. That's not as exciting.
Nah.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have a problem with somebody keeping him. I just... If I keep him in round 20 and he tanks and becomes the bench player he was before this year, then I'll feel really dumb giving up Darvish in round 4, you know?
I feel like since Darvish is your only pitcher, yeah, I feel like you have to keep him in round 4. For what it's worth, I would go Stanton, Darvish, JD Martinez, and Josh Harrison. A bit of a combination of the two of you.
All right.
And we're done for the day. Thank you guys very much. We're doing a mock draft on Friday, and we're going to talk about it on Monday. So we'll talk to you then. See you later.